mark from Jennings and Doggy. He stopped working on his snowflake and took it. As he looked down at it, a single tear splashed off the back of his hand.
"Thank you," he said.
"I'll miss you, Mark."
I offered him my hand and he took it. He never took his eyes off his present. He just reached across his body toward his shoulder and met my hand. He shook my hand and then pushed his glasses back on his nose. I walked over to the day room door and opened it.
"Wait,"
he cried out.
"Don't leave me. Please don't leave me."
He rushed at me and grabbed my arm. I threw my arms around him. He cried into my shoulder,
"Don't leave me. Please don't leave me."
He shook so hard I could hardly hold him. The 100-year-old nun came over to us and took Mark from me. He buried his face against her and cried. I slipped through the day room door for home. Chapter 5. I crossed my legs on the shiny, wicker-covered subway seat and leaned heavily into Mom's arm. I held Doggy under my chin and thought of Mark. He couldn't know it hurt as much to leave someone there as it did to be left. "Mom?" I shouted over the clatter of the train noises.
"Yes?"
"Why did you leave me there? Why didn't you come back for me?"
"I couldn't, dear. I was sick."
"Did you throw up and everything?"
"No," she said. "It wasn't that kind of sickness."
"What kind was it?"
"Well, it was a different kind."
"Sister Claire said you were at a rest home, resting. Were you tired, Mom?"
"Yes, dear, I was. I was very tired."
"Were you tired of me?"
"No," she hugged me. "I wasn't tired of you. I was tired of trying to do too many things at once. Can you understand that?"
"Uh-huh. Sister Claire said you were worried about Jerome and things like that."
Mom didn't say anything. She just kept looking out the side window into the blackness of the tunnel.
"Mom?"
"Yes, dear."
"You're not tired anymore, are you?"
"No, dear. I'm not tired anymore. I promise I won't leave you again."
"You promise?"
"Yes, dear, I promise."
I leaned into her. "Hey, Mom?"
"Yes?"
"Did everybody stay at a home like me?"
"No.
Only you and Larry were in homes."
"What about Walter and George?"
"They stayed with a nice family through the church."
"They stayed in a church?"
"No," she laughed. "The church made arrangements for them to stay with a nice family. They'll be home tomorrow."
"And Larry? Will he be home tomorrow, too?"
"He's home already. He's minding Jean."
"Oh, great. I really miss him."
We changed trains at 14th Street. Mom bought me a Little Lulu comic book and a Sky Bar. I loved Sky Bars. They're like having a box of those fancy chocolates all in one little row. Each section tastes better than the last. I read my comic book to Doggy and shared my Sky Bar with him. Mom read a magazine. I found myself drifting off, thinking about Mark. I wondered if he had ever read a comic book. There were none at the home. I wondered if he ever rode in a subway or an automobile. I guess he never had a Sky Bar, either.
"Is Jerome ever going to come home and go to the movies with me?"
"I don't know, dear.
I hope so."
"When you visit him next time, can I go?"
"No, I'm afraid not.
They don't allow children under 12 to visit hospitals."
"Why not?"
"Well, I think they're afraid you might get germs and get sick."
"And if you're over 12, you can't get germs?"
"Not as easily as you can when you're under 12. Let's not talk about it anymore," she said.
"Let's just keep on praying for him, all right?"
"All right," I said. We came up from the subway at 188th Street and the Grand Concourse. My first glimpse of the only world I'd ever known until 3 very long months ago was the Lowe's Paradise Theater. The Great Lover with Bob Hope and Rhonda Fleming was on the marquee.
We began our two-block walk down 188th Street for home. I couldn't believe how small everything had gotten. The cobblestone road seemed so much narrower now than I had remembered. We passed Crumb's Candy, a big ice cream parlor and candy store. All the kids from the neighborhood would go there for a 2-cent plain. If you were there with your mother or father and they bought ice cream, they'd give you the 2-cent plain for nothing. That was a good deal. We passed Lutz's shoe repair shop at the corner. We crossed Valentine Avenue to my block. The street was unusually quiet. The street was normally filled with lots of people, lots of kids. Maybe it was the cold weather? Mom pushed open the heavy black iron door with the glass panel. The hallway of number 267 smelled like pine soap. Mr. Zabo, the super, mopped the hallways every day with pine soap. It smelled good. We climbed the 3 flights of stairs to apartment 32. I was home. "Larry!" Mom shouted. She was angry. The front hall was filled with towels and toilet paper and everything that was supposed to be in the bathroom. Jean was sitting in the middle of it, smiling. Jean was a scrawny little kid who hardly ever talked. His hair was blondish and looked a lot like shredded wheat. He was 4 years old and slept almost all the time. "Larry!" Mom shouted again. "Where are you?"
"I'm coming," he shouted back.
He came running into the hall and slipped on a misplaced bar of soap. He crashed to the floor and bumped his head. His glasses flew off his face. Jean started to laugh, but Larry started to cry. "It serves you right," Mom said. "God punished you for not taking better care of your brother." He got to his feet, rubbing his head. He picked up his glasses and put them on. Larry was very much like me, except he was older, 11, taller and stronger. He had as many freckles as I did, and his hair was as red as mine. I think without his glasses, we looked pretty much like twins.
"Jennings!"
he shouted as he got his first good look at me. Larry couldn't see anything without his glasses on.
"Hi, have you been?"
I asked. We clasped hands. He sniffled back his tears and rubbed his head again.
"Hey, I got something to show you,"
he said.
"Not until you clean up this mess," Mom said.
"Oh, Ma, do I have to?"
"Yes."
"Come on, I'll help you," I said. Larry and I cleaned up the mess while Mom took Jean into her bedroom for a nap.
"So where were you?"
I asked.
"I first stayed at a home. Ugh, it was awful. Scary," he made a face.
"Then I stayed with Mrs. Keys. She gave me a present. She was nice."
"What did you get?"
"I can't tell you.
That's what I got to show you."
We got the last of the bathroom things back into the bathroom. We crossed through the living room into the back bedroom. All the rooms in our apartment except the back bedroom were off the front hall. The kitchen, living room, bathroom, and Mom's bedroom.
"What you got?"
I asked.
"A bugle."
He held it up. It was all tarnished and dented. He tried to blow a few notes, but all he got were fat cheeks and some squeaks.
"I gotta practice," he said.
I showed him Doggy and told him about the home of the angels. I told him about the carpenters and about Mark.
"You mean he ain't never gonna leave the home? Never ever?"
I shook my head no.
"Wow, that's awful."
Larry told me about his stay with Mrs. Keys. He told me he could eat anything he wanted, anytime he wanted. "And milk, too," he added, "as much as I wanted." He slipped into thinking about something, probably food. "I kind of would have liked to stay there," he said.
"And not come back?"
"Yeah, I kind of would have liked that."
"But wouldn't you miss not being here anymore?"
"No. I don't like George or Walter, and they don't like me. They're always pushing me around and calling me names. And Mom don't like me either."
"She does so.
Says you." He lay across the bed, staring up at the ceiling. He sounded very unhappy. I looked over toward the window. I could see across the alleyway to another building. Some of the lights were lit. I thought about the barred windows at the home of the angels. I thought about Mark and about Larry. Both of them were unhappy, and both of them were wishing they were someplace else. I awoke to shouts coming from the kitchen.
"What's up?"
Larry asked. He squinted his eyes and felt around the floor for his glasses.
"I think George and Walter are home."
"Oh, darn," he moaned. George and Walter were fighting with Mom. They were angry about living someplace else while Mom was resting. George and Walter looked very much alike. Both of them were tall, and both of them had black hair. George had a lot of pimples on his face, and he was skinnier. Walter had dark-rimmed glasses and smooth skin.
"How could I leave you home by yourselves?" Mom asked them.
"Easy. Just do it. Leave us here, that's all," Walter snarled.
"And what would you eat? How would you take care of yourselves?"
"We don't eat all that much now to worry about it," George said.
"And I'd take care of myself anyway," Walter added.
"You take care of yourself?" George laughed at Walter. "You couldn't take care of garbage without Mom around to help you."
"I could so," Walter growled back. "I do more around here than you do."
"Says you."
"Now stop it," Mom yelled. "I don't understand you kids. I try to do the best I can. I put you where you can continue with your school. This is what I get for it."
"Well, your best isn't all that good," Walter said.
"Look who's talking. You sure get everything you want," George said.
He got to his feet.
"I'm going out."
"Yeah, run out. You always do," Walter yelled at George as he left the kitchen. George pushed past me.
"Hi," he mumbled.
"Hi."
The door slammed. Mom started to cry.
"Now look what you did," I snapped at Walter. "You made Mom cry." "I didn't do anything. George did. For Christ's sakes, you can't say anything around here without..."
He broke off and stormed out of the kitchen.
"Don't cry, Mom," I said. "I'm not crying."
She wiped her tears on a handkerchief she pulled from her pocket.
"I'm not crying."
She got up and lit the stove under the coffee pot.
"I have to go to St. Vincent's this morning," she sighed. "I have to see if we can get a food basket for Christmas."
"Can I go?" Larry asked as he came into the kitchen.
"No, I want you to stay here and mind Jean. I'll take Jennings with me. He'll help me carry whatever we get." "Oh, darn. Why do I always have to mind Jean? Why can't Walter or George do it?" "Walter has to study, and George is not here." "Oh, darn," he pouted.
He stomped out of the kitchen.
"Lift your feet,"
she called after the clomping sound going down the hallway. Mom and I returned from St. Vincent's about 1 in the afternoon. We got a turkey and a basket of vegetables, but no toys. We came into the apartment. Larry was standing in the living room with his arms outstretched. He was crying. As soon as Larry spotted Mom, he ran to her.
"What's going on?" she asked.
"Nothing," Walter said. "He wouldn't clean the kitchen, so I punished him."
"I'll do the punishing around here," she said. "Not you."
"I was only trying to teach the dumb ox how to do what he's told, that's all."
"Well, I'll teach him anything he needs to know. And stop calling him a dumb ox."
She gave Larry a hug.
"Now, go and clean up the kitchen," she said. "Do I have to?"
he whined.
"Yes. Don't you want to help your mother?"
"Oh, darn. Why do I always have to do everything around here?" He stomped off into the kitchen. I followed him with the basket of vegetables.
"I'll help you," I said. "Do we get any toys?"
"No, they didn't have any left."
"Oh, darn. We never get any toys. I wish I was..."
He broke off.
"Where's George?"
Mom asked as she came into the kitchen with the turkey.
"Where do you think?"
Walter answered sarcastically.
"He's out," Larry said. "Him and Walter were fighting again."
"About what?"
"Nothing. They always fight about nothing."
Mom took Jean into her bedroom for a nap. Larry went into the back bedroom to read a comic book. I went into the living room to where Walter was studying.
"Walter?"
I whispered. I knew better than to talk loud when he was studying.
"What?"
Do you think Mom would let me sing at midnight mass?
Why not?
I was surprised at his answer. I thought for sure he would yell at me for bothering him.
That's great, I said.
But it's not up to her. It's up to Sister Leviticus.
Oh, do you think Sister Leviticus will let me?
If you wait about half an hour, I'll go to the convent with you and we'll find out, he said. I want to sing too.
All right, I said. I'll wait downstairs for you.
I left.
Walter and I were the only two of the family in the choir. George used to be, but now that he's in high school, he doesn't have time. Larry never liked the choir. He was an altar boy once, but they fired him. He was carrying everything for the altar one day when he tripped. And Jean, of course, is too little.
So how you been? George interrupted my thoughts. He sat down beside me on the front step.
He lit a cigarette. George smoked Lucky's, even though he was only 15. Mom said he was the man of the house and could smoke if he wanted to.
Mom is looking for you, I told him.
Mom's always looking for me. What you doing here? It's cold out.
I'm waiting for Walter.
Okay, I'll see you. He got up.
No, don't go, I said. He won't be here for a while.
He sat back down.
Were you with a family or in a home? He asked.
In a home.
How was it?
It was okay. Once you learn the rules, it ain't so bad.
What rules?
Oh, like don't talk to nobody after the clicker sounds, and remember your number, things like that.
That's tough, kid.
Hey, George, how come you and Walter fight all the time?
He's a mama's boy and I don't like it. She backs him up all the time. Right or wrong, she backs him up.
It ain't fair. Isn't it because he's smart?
Smart ain't got nothing to do with it. I'm just as smart as him, and so are you. But we don't get the books and stuff he gets. Whatever he needs for school, he gets.
He got to his feet.
He'll get a book before you eat, kid.
He walked off.
I watched him walk down 188th Street and turn onto Tybout Avenue. He sounded as unhappy as Larry did.
Walter came out of the building and we walked up the street together.
I just saw George, I said.
So?
How come you and him don't get along?
He's a bum like the old man.
What old man?
Never mind. Just take my word for it, he's a bum.
But I like him. Sometimes.
Well, I don't. All the time.
We stopped talking. He looked like he was going to get mad, so I let it go. I had to skip along to keep up with him. He was so much taller. I had to take a whole lot of steps to just one of his.
Sister Leviticus gave us permission to sing. She told us to be at practice in the morning. I was excited. I loved singing in the choir, especially at midnight mass. On Christmas Eve, George and Larry went out to try to find us a Christmas tree. We got our tree after the Christmas tree man was sure he wasn't going to sell anymore. Then he would throw them away. If you caught the one he threw, it was yours. Mom always sent George or Larry for the tree because they were the strongest. Whenever they went together, we would get a really good one. Sister Leviticus wanted everyone at church early to go through the moves once more before Mass. After the practice, we all waited for Mass to begin. I saw Mom near the front. She waved to me, and I waved back. The altar was beautiful. All the candles were lit, and there were lots of red flowers with red bows on them. There was a nativity set up on one side of the altar, but the manger was empty. They didn't bring the baby Jesus to his manger until midnight. Finally, the Mass started. We filed out in our black and white outfits with stiff collars. We all wore giant red bows and carried lighted candles. It looked beautiful. As I marched in the procession, I thought about Mark. I wished he could be here. Sister Justine, the principal, brought up the baby Jesus and laid him in the manger. The choir sang like angels, and chills ran all over me. When we got up to the choir loft, I looked down to the manger and the baby Jesus, and I whispered, Merry Christmas, Mark.
Snow started falling as we walked up the long hill toward home. We walked with a crowd of our neighbors. Everyone was excited about the snow and about how beautiful the Mass was. We got home to find George and Larry had gotten us a really big tree. It almost looked like one you might buy if you had the money. We decorated the tree together. Mom and Jean did the bottom part. Larry and I did the middle. George and Walter did the top. They argued about who was going to put the star on top, and of course, Walter won. Mom didn't have very much money for presents, so she bought Jean a string of four ducks and a Monopoly game for the rest of us. Nobody but Jean liked the ducks. All we heard, until he broke them, was quack, quack, quack. It nearly drove everyone crazy. Christmas gave way to New Year's and to school. I was anxious to get back to see my friends. Most of all, I wanted to see Sister Ann Charles, my teacher. Our second grade classroom was in total disorder. Spitballs and airplanes were flying everywhere. Many of the kids were showing off some of the things they'd gotten for Christmas. It was good to be back. Sister Ann Charles came into the room and went straight to her desk. A warm feeling came over me at the sight of her. The last of the paper planes landed, and the kids took their seats. Sister Ann Charles was tall and thin. Her face was smooth and soft. She had dark eyebrows that bent over the tops of her wide eyes, making them seem larger than they actually were. She had dimples, like Sister Claire's. She looked a little like her. We said our morning prayers and the Pledge of Allegiance. We no sooner ended when Sister Ann Charles called my name. Jennings. A cold chill froze me. The sound of the clicker ran through my mind and I couldn't move. Jennings? What's the matter? I couldn't speak. The calling of my name brought back all the memories of the home in one great wave. She got to her feet quickly and came over to me. She saw both the fear in my face and the tears in my eyes. She hugged me. I pressed my face into her and cried. Shh, she whispered. Don't be frightened. I cried hard as she held me. Nobody in the room laughed. They sat silently in their seats. Perhaps I frightened them.
You're not in an institution anymore, she said. You're home now, with your friends. We care about you. I'm sorry, sister. Don't be sorry. We understand.
She gave me her handkerchief. I wiped my eyes and blew my nose. I handed it back to her.
No, you keep that, she said.
She went back to her desk and picked up an envelope. She brought it to me.
Give this to your mother for me, will you? Yes, sister.
Are you all right now? She asked.
Yes, sister.
I tucked the envelope into my pocket. As the day moved on, I realized I had missed a lot of school, and they had learned bunches of new things. There wasn't anything I understood. Before the home, I just went to school, and it was fun. I got 100 on almost every test I took, and I didn't think anything about it. Now, it was different. I listened to the questions that were asked, and didn't know any of the answers. I was lost. That evening, I found out what the note said. I had missed too much of the school year and would be left back. Larry got the same kind of note from his teacher.
Now everyone's going to call me a dumb ox, he cried.
No, they won't, Mom said.
I was a little afraid of the same thing, but I didn't say it. I was sorry I wouldn't be going into the third grade with all my friends. But I wasn't sorry I would be staying with Sister Ann Charles. I'd see my friends after school and at lunchtime. For the rest of the term, I was made a monitor. I didn't take part in any of the exams or other schoolwork. I erased the blackboards and slapped the erasers. I handed out books and helped Sister. It was fun being her helper, even though some of the kids were calling me teacher's pet. Winter turned into spring, and with it, April and my 9th birthday. Mom bought me a coloring book and a box of 48 crayons.
I loved coloring, and so did Larry. I shared my coloring book with him. On the last day of class, we said goodbye to some of the kids who would be going away for summer vacations with their families. Sister Ann Charles spoke to us. "Children, as most of you might already know from your parents or from the radio, there is a war going on in Korea. War is a very bad thing. People get hurt and die. Innocent civilians as well as soldiers. We have to pray for all of them." "Yes, sister," we said in unison. "So often when war happens," she said, "many children lose their families and their homes. These children have no place to go and no one to care for them."
As she spoke about the children, I thought back to the home of the angels and Mark. I knew what she was talking about. I wanted to tell Sister you didn't need a war to find children like that. There were a whole bunch of them somewhere in Brooklyn.
"Now, children,"
she was saying as my mind returned to the room,
"as you all know, I am a Mary Knoll sister. I have been trained to help and care for children in all parts of the world, especially where there are no sisters or where there is trouble. In a few days, I am leaving for South Korea to try to help with the little children who need me."
I couldn't believe my ears. I stared at Sister Ann Charles. Some of the kids began to cry. I was in shock. She looked directly at me as she spoke. I think she knew my heart was breaking, but there wasn't anything she could do about it.
"Would you pray for me and all those homeless children?" she asked.
She never took her eyes from me. I could barely see her through the blur in my eyes. I was losing Sister Ann Charles. I hugged her goodbye, as did all the other kids. She held me for a long time.
"Jennings," she whispered, "please don't be too angry with me. I'll always love you and pray for you."
The pain I felt the day I left Doggy at the home and had to go alone to the carpenter's returned to my throat. I pressed it as hard as I could, but it stayed. I believed I was crying on the inside. I believed the tears were running down my throat. On Friday, June 23rd, 1950, I looked back from the doorway of the second grade classroom at my friend and never saw her again. George passed all his exams at Cardinal Hayes High School and would be a sophomore next year. Walter graduated with honors and won a scholarship to St. Regis High School. Larry and I were left back. Now that Sister Ann Charles was gone, I hated the idea of not going on with the others to the third grade. I felt stupid and alone. Larry and I palled around together almost all the time. We never spoke about it, but we both felt the same way. Dumb. Every day, Larry and I went up to St. James Park to play. We stayed until we heard the church bells at 6. Then we started for home. Mom wanted us in about 6 for supper, and the bells were our alarm clock. One particular day, Larry and I came in from the park to find a nun in our kitchen. "What's she doing here?" he asked. I shrugged my shoulders.
"Hello," she said. "Who are you?"
I'm Larry, and that's Jennings. Who are you?"
"I'm Sister Mercedes. I'm here to take care of your mother."
"Mom! What's wrong with Mom?" Larry asked.
"Quiet now, or you'll wake her."
"What's wrong with Mom?" I whispered.
"She's ill, very ill."
"Oh, boy," Larry said. "Here we go again." He stomped off down the hall.
"What's wrong with her?" I asked again. "I don't know, but for one thing, she doesn't eat enough. She gives all the food to you kids. She goes for days without eating. That's no good."
I was dumbfounded. I didn't know Mom didn't eat. It's true I hardly ever saw her eat, but I thought she ate at work or someplace.
"Are you sure?"
I asked.
"I'm sure," she snapped. Do you think she'll, have to go someplace to rest?" "I don't know. The doctor will be here soon. Now get along with you and wash up for dinner, and don't make a mess."
"Oh, gosh." I followed Larry into the back bedroom. He had all his things scattered all over the bed,
his bottle cap collection, his baseball cards, most of his comics, and his bugle.
What are you doing?
I'm packing. I'm not going to be surprised like I was last time. I'm going to be ready.
Ready? Ready for what?
You know. You know as well as I do. I did know, but I didn't want to think about it.
But Mom promised, I said.
Yeah, well, she promised me a bike for every birthday I can remember. I never got one.
Oh, gosh, I said.
I fell back on the bed in the only empty spot Larry left for falling back on. I pulled Doggy from the side of the bed and hugged him. 2 days later, Larry left. George and Walter had already gone to stay with one of Mom's brothers. They didn't want any of the little kids that would cause them any trouble, so they didn't want Jean or Larry or me. Jean went to a neighbor's. I watched Larry leave with a strange lady. He cried as he tucked his bugle under his arm. He pushed his glasses back on his nose the way Mark used to do. We said goodbye. A short time later, a man came for me. He had gray hair and a leathery sort of face. He was wearing a brown sweater and a hat. He took my laundry bag and put it into the back seat of his car. He put Doggy and me in the front. We drove off. I sat quietly. As much as I missed Mark and wanted to see him again, I was mixed up about my feelings of going away again. I wondered if Mark got any taller or fatter. I wondered if Butch was still the toughest kid there. I asked the man how Mark was, but he didn't know. He said he was only a driver and didn't know any of the kids. We pulled up in front of a large white house with a green screened-in porch. "Here we are," he said.
But, this isn't the home of the angels?
"No," he said. "This is St. Teresa's." My heart sank. 1,000 thoughts ran through my mind. I hadn't ever thought I might be going to some other home. I cradled Doggy in my arms and got out of the car. A numbness came over me as I climbed the rickety front steps of this strange new place. I was frightened. Chapter 6. The driver left Doggy and me on the porch side of the screen door. I watched him leave. I regripped my laundry bag and slung it over my shoulder. I pushed open the heavy front door. The room smelled musty and old. I stood in the middle of the dark front hall and listened to the door creak as it closed behind me. There were no other sounds. There were 3 doors off the hall and a twisting staircase. Halfway up the carpeted stairs was a small, round window that let in a long stream of sunlight. It ended at my feet. I was afraid to move any farther. I heard a squeak from the stairs. Someone was coming down.
"Jennings Birch,"
a cold and distant voice asked as the figure reached the window and stopped. I couldn't speak.
"Are you Jennings Birch?" she asked.
There was annoyance in her voice as she started down the last section of steps.
"Yes, ma'am."
"Yes, sister," she snapped.
"Follow me."
She brushed past me and pushed open one of the 3 doors. I followed her.
"What do you have there?"
she asked from over her shoulder.
"Well, I got a laundry bag with some things."
"I don't mean the bag."
"Oh, this is Doggy. He's my friend."
I held him up to her back.
"What do you intend to do with it?"
Nothing. He's just my friend, that's all."
She quickened her pace through the maze of hallways. I quickened mine. She stopped and opened the door to a dormitory. We went in. The room looked familiar. There were 2 rows of metal beds, one on each side of the room. A small chest separated each of them. At the far end was a bathroom. The light wasn't on, but I could see the tiles and the dark shadows. The windows were large and barred. She led me to bed number 17 and pointed to the cabinet alongside of it.
"Put that thing in there and leave it there,"
she ordered.
Under no circumstances are you to sleep with it. Do you understand me?
I fought back the tears as I placed my little friend in this wooden chamber.
Do you understand?
She shouted. I jumped. I nodded my head to show I understood. She slapped me hard across the face.
When I speak, I expect to be answered.
Yes, sister,
I cried.
Yes, what?
I understand,
I said. I held my stinging face and wiped my eyes and nose on my sleeve. Sister Frances, at the home of the angels, was nice compared to this sister. She was tall and thin. Her face was bright red with a vein that ran up from her temple to her forehead. I was sure the headpiece surrounding her face was the cause of her redness. She talked with her teeth clenched tightly together. She frightened me. She led me from the dormitory to a playroom, pushed me through the door, and closed it behind me. The room was empty. I sat near the door on one of the many small wooden chairs scattered all around the room. The feeling of wanting to cry was overwhelming, but I fought it off. I swallowed hard and forced my eyes wide open. The room was large and bright. There were two patched-up screen doors that could open out onto a grassless yard. Every so often, a swirl of wind would lift a small puff of dust off the yard and carry it away. There were four long tables, two on each side of the room. The shelves along each wall were filled with games and playthings. The floor was wooden and well-worn. I heard a strange sound coming from the hallway. It was low at first, but then it grew louder. I couldn't figure out what it was. It kept getting louder and louder. It pulsated like a heartbeat. Suddenly I knew what it was. It was the thunderous steps of all the kids marching down the hallway. The door opened and the kids began to file in. The uniform line turned to chaos. Most of them ran for the screen doors, throwing them open. They dashed out into the grassless yard, raising whole clouds of dust. A few kids took games from the shelves to play with on the tables. I stayed where I was. I hadn't been noticed, and I was glad. I stayed in the safety of the chair for the entire afternoon. I tried to figure out who might be number 16. Naturally, I picked the kid with the biggest and the funniest-looking ears. The sun began to dip down below some of the trees on the far side of the play yard.
All right, children, dinner time,
a nun called out. She slapped her hands together. I couldn't believe my ears. She actually sounded nice. This one was a fat, roly-poly nun with bright red cheeks and a sweet smile. As the kids started forming lines, I approached her.
Sister?
I spoke with caution.
Yes,
she said. She smiled.
I'm new here, sister. I don't know where I'm supposed to be.
Well, we'll take care of that. What's your number?
17.
Stevie, you're number 16, aren't you?
She asked one of the boys online.
Yes, Sister Anne Catherine.
There, son. Stand behind Stevie, she told me.
And Stevie,
she recalled the boy,
would you see that this boy is okay?
Yes, sister.
What's your name?
She asked.
Jennings.
What's your first name?
That is my first name, sister.
All right, Jennings. Enjoy your dinner.
Gosh, she sure sounded nice. I stood behind Stevie. He didn't have big funny ears. In fact, his ears were kind of normal. He was about a half foot taller than me and skinny. He had dirty blonde hair that stuck straight up, sort of like a brush. Sister Anne Catherine clapped her hands together for the second time, and the line started moving. It crossed my mind to tell her about the little clicker, but then I thought better of it. I really hated that little clicker. The dining room tables were laid out in long rows. There were about a dozen kids at each table, boys on one side of the room and girls on the other. I played with a boiled frankfurter and some stiff, wax-like beans.
By the looks on the faces of the other kids and the unfinished food in front of them, it was obvious that everyone shared a dislike for the tasteless supper. My eyes met those of the boy across from me. He had red hair that stuck up like a rooster and two large front teeth. He smiled. I smiled back. He quickly lost his smile and looked in both directions for the whereabouts of the nuns. When he realized he was safe, he smiled again. His actions told me the rules were the same here. No smiling in the dining room. We were marched back to the playroom by the nun with the cold eyes and the popping veins. I took a seat at one of the tables near the doorway and watched. None of the kids went into the yard this time. I think maybe the door was locked. I kept my eyes on Stevie. I wasn't sure what the next move would be, and I didn't want to get into any trouble. I figured watching him and doing whatever he did would be the safest thing.
"Look!"
one of the kids yelled out.
"A firefly!"
Many of the kids went over to the screen doors to look out. I stretched my neck up to try to see over them. I'd never seen a fly on fire before and was anxious to see one. I got up and slowly made my way around the side of the room toward the screen doors. I reached the group of kids with their hands cupped around their eyes and their faces pressed against the door. I tried to see over them.
"Fireflies,"
the boy with the rooster-like hair said to me. He was waiting for a spot so he could see them too.
"I never saw a fly on fire," I said. "They're not on fire," he laughed. "They just light up, that's all."
"Didn't you ever see a firefly?" Stevie asked. He was standing behind me.
"No,"
I answered.
"Hey, move over!"
He pushed some of the kids away from the door.
"Look,"
he said. He pointed to the spot he had just cleared for me. I stepped up to the screen door and pressed my face against it. I cupped my hands around my eyes to adjust to the darkness.
Suddenly I saw them.
First a slight glow, and then they went dark.
"Wow,"
I said.
"How do they do that?" "They got bulbs in their tails,"
someone said.
"No, they don't, stupid," Stevie said. "They got some stuff under tails that glows in the dark, like those statues, you know?"
"Oh, yeah, those plastic statues. I know."
"Wow,"
I said. I was held captive by the blinking lights.
"What's your name?"
Stevie asked.
"Jennings,"
I said into the screen door.
"What's your first name?"
"That is my first name."
"That's a funny name," he said.
By the way he said it, I'm sure he didn't mean to hurt my feelings.
"My name is Stevie."
I came away from the door and shook his hand.
"Yeah, I know. I heard Sister Ann Catherine call you Stevie." "Are you a lifer?"
he asked.
"No, a part-timer."
"Yeah, me too. Are you tired?"
"Yes."
"Come on, I'll take you to the dorm."
I followed Stevie. When we reached the dormitory, he went to his cabinet and I went to mine. I reached in for my laundry bag to get my pajamas, but I found Doggy's nose instead. I crouched on the floor to talk to him.
"Hi, Doggy,"
I whispered. I gave him time to answer.
"I'm sorry you have to be locked up in here."
I kissed him and held his fur to my cheek.
"Don't let Sister Barbara catch you with him,"
Stevie said. He was standing behind me.
"Sister Barbara? Is she the one?"
He twisted up the corners of his mouth and nodded his head yes. I didn't even have to finish what I was saying. He knew whatever I was going to say was right.
"She's mean," he said. "Real mean."
He left for the bathroom and I followed. The room looked very much like the one at the home of the angels. It had the same kind of numbered hooks and the same uncovered toilet bowls. We washed and brushed. I was at my hook changing when Stevie pulled off his shirt. His back was scarred and torn. Some of the cuts were new. They were still oozing blood. I cringed.
"What happened?"
"Nothing," he said. He continued to change in silence. I didn't ask again. The lights were out and the room was quiet. Only a single lamp burned at the far end of the room at the night nun's desk. No one was there. I tried to adjust my eyes to the darkness of this new place, but I couldn't. I looked toward the window, but saw nothing. The night sky was so dark, and there were no street lamps outside. I heard someone cough, and someone else sniffle. If I couldn't see, I thought, I'd listen. I heard someone crying. I heard a sound I had never heard before. It was coming from outside. It was sort of like a whistle, a broken-up whistle. It must be some wild animal. I was frightened. I sat up and looked around. There was still nothing but the single lamp burning, and no nun. I slipped from my bed to the floor. I opened my cabinet. It squeaked. I scrunched up my face and shut my eyes as I fully opened the door. I removed Doggy, reclosed the door, and got back into bed.
"Hi, Doggy," I whispered. "If I hid you at the home of the angels, I can hide you here."
I kissed him. I hugged him once or twice before sliding him under my pillow. I lay back and felt his nose. I wasn't frightened anymore. Breakfast at St. Teresa's was an adventure. Each kid was served a metal cup of hot cocoa. It was much too hot to drink, so you had to let it cool. When it did, a thick film covered the top. The idea was to get the film off without spilling the cocoa on the white tablecloth. I watched some of the others to see how they'd do it. They didn't. They just let it sit there and didn't bother to drink it at all. Stevie poked my arm.
"Watch,"
he said with his eyes. I watched. He took the spoon from his prunes and licked it off. Then he held the spoon over the top of the cocoa. He gently lowered it. When he reached the bottom of the cup, he pulled it straight out. The spoon had the film wrapped all around it. He drank the cocoa. I smiled. I slapped my mouth and looked around. I was safe. Nobody had seen me smile. I followed Stevie's silent instructions and did the same with my spoon. It worked. After breakfast, the lifers went to class. The rest of us were marched into the playroom, where the screen doors were open. I walked across the grassless yard to a spot near a tree. I sat down. The yard was very wide and long. It was bounded on two sides by very tall trees, and on the others by the building and a small creek. I sat by the tree, watching the other kids run around. The boy with the rooster hair approached me.
"Hi, Jennix."
"Hi, it's Jennings," I said.
"Oh, Jennings. My name's Bobby, but everyone calls me Rooster."
He laughed.
"I guess I look like a rooster. Do you want to play tag?"
"Okay." I no sooner spoke than he hit me across the head.
"You're it,"
he shouted, and disappeared into a cloud of dust. I sprang to my feet. I wasn't too sure who was playing, but it wasn't all that hard to figure out. Anyone who ran as I approached was playing. I chased after quite a few kids, but couldn't catch anyone. Then I remembered what I used to do when I played with my brothers and couldn't catch any of them. I fell down. I didn't move. The laughter that first erupted quieted. A few of the boys approached me. I stayed still.
"Are you all right?"
one of them asked. I didn't answer. I lay motionless, my face toward the ground. "Hey, kid, are you hurt?" another asked as he drew closer to me. When he was within reach, I shot out my hand and struck his foot.
"You're it!"
I shouted and sprang to my feet. The whole yard broke into laughter. All but the boy I tagged, of course. We played tag for quite some time. I didn't get tagged again, and I was glad. I knew the possum trick wouldn't work twice. The game began to peter out. Some of the kids drifted off to do other things. I sat by the tree. Stevie sat next to me.
"As soon as we catch our breath," he said, "we'll go and wash up. If we go into lunch like this..."
He raised his eyebrows.
"Sister Barbara will kill us."
Our faces, hands, and arms were filthy. We had dark rings around our necks. We reached the sinks.
"Whatever you do in this bathroom," he started to say.
"Don't make a mess," we said together, and then laughed.
"You've been in many of these homes?"
he asked.
"Just one other, home of the angels in Brooklyn."
I never been to that one. This is my fifth. It ain't so bad as some others I've been in.
Are the rules any different here? I asked.
Nah, they're all the same. Keep your mouth shut and don't pee in bed.
I ain't done that in years.
What are you in for? He asked.
My mother's sick.
Is she gonna die?
I don't think so. I hope not.
Well, my mother's dead. She died a long time ago, and my father, he's a drunken bum. He's the one who gave me this.
He whirled around and revealed his back to me.
He gets real drunk and beats me up. The neighbors call the cops, and they take him away. They bring me to these places.
It ain't fair, he mumbled.
I guess the worst of it. I hate him.
How long do you stay here?
Until they let him out. Then he comes and gets me. He promises he ain't gonna do it no more, and then, wham, I'm right back at one of these places. It ain't fair.
We finished washing and were wiping down the sinks when Stevie started talking to himself.
One of these days, he ain't gonna hit me no more. One of these days, I'm gonna...
He didn't finish his words, but he nearly rubbed the porcelain off the sink he rubbed so hard. He threw his towel from where he was standing, and it landed on his hook.
Pretty good, I said.
I threw my towel. It landed on the floor in front of me.
How old are you?
He asked.
I'm 9. Well, I'm 10. I'm the toughest kid in here. If you got any trouble, see me.
He stuck his thumb in his chest to emphasize his last word. Stevie was the butch of St. Teresa's, but it didn't bother me. I liked him. He was angry and bitter about his father, but he was also sad and alone and hurt. I don't mean because he's in this place. We're all sad and alone being here. I mean because it's inside him. When we leave here, we won't be sad and alone no more. But I think Stevie will be. What bothered me the most was the thought that Mom might die. I hadn't thought about it until Stevie said it. It scared me. After lunch, Rooster, Stevie, and I went down by the creek to catch some frogs.
Are there any alligators in here?
Rooster asked.
A few, Stevie said, but not too many. Mostly snakes.
Snakes? I jumped back from the edge of the creek.
They're just little ones. They don't eat much.
Oh, gosh, I said.
This place is crawling with wild animals. Just last night I heard one.
Oh, yeah? Rooster said.
What kind of animal?
I don't know, but he was a big one.
What did he sound like?
Stevie asked.
Well, let's see. It was like a whistle, but it was all broken up. Sort of like this.
I made the sound as best I could. Stevie started to laugh. So did Rooster.
What's so funny? That wasn't a wild animal, Stevie laughed. That was a cricket.
A cricket? Like Jiminy Cricket?
Yeah. But these ones ain't got no clothes on, Stevie said.
Oh. Stevie, Rooster, and I palled around together. Nobody spoke about friends, but that was okay with me. I remember how it felt when I left Mark. I didn't want to feel that way anymore. It hurt. Stevie taught Rooster and me how to climb trees without scraping our knees, and how to make a frog jump. At night, I took Doggy from the cabinet to bed with me. For the first few minutes, we would talk about the day and about how I felt. I loved Doggy so much. I needed him. One morning, Doggy wasn't under my pillow, but in my arms. I quickly sat up and looked around. Sister Barbara wasn't there. I was safe. I jumped down from the bed and stuck him in the cabinet. I was about to leave for the bathroom to get dressed when Sister Anne Catherine danced past me singing. She always danced and sang in the mornings. I listened to her song.
Well, if I had a doggie cute as him, I wouldn't sleep with him under my pillow. La-di-la-li-la-di-di-lo.
She laughed. She knew I had doggie and she wasn't mad at me. That made me happy, but I had to be more careful. If Sister Barbara ever found him, she'd kill me. Worse than that, she might take him away from me. I was in the yard, sitting by the tree with Rooster after breakfast. We were waiting for Stevie.
I'll go and find him,
Rooster said.
Okay.
Rooster walked off. He dragged his feet every step of the way just to raise as much dust as he could. We all did that when we crossed the yard. It was fun. As the dust began to settle, I saw Stevie coming from the house.
Did you see Rooster?
I shouted. He didn't answer me. He reached me and dropped down.
Did you see Rooster? He went to look for you.
Again, he didn't answer me.
What's wrong?
Nothing, he sighed.
Want to run away? Run away? Where?
I don't know. Anywhere.
What's the matter, Stevie?
They told me my father was coming for me today, he mumbled. I ain't going with him no more.
He toyed with the ground between his feet.
I ain't gonna get hit no more.
He got to his feet.
I'll see you,
he said as he started to walk away.
Wait!
I scrambled to my feet.
Where are you going?
I caught up to him. There were tears on his cheeks.
Stevie, where are you going?
I'm leaving. I'm going where no one will find me, where no one can hurt me no more. I'll see you.
But, didn't you ask me to go with you?
I was just talking. I gotta go by myself.
He stopped in his tracks and I almost ran into him.
Hey, Jennings.
He paused to look at me.
I'll see you.
His eyes told me goodbye more than his words did. He turned and walked away alone. I watched him walk into the trees. I stood watching the trees for a long time. The tops of them swayed gently in the morning breeze. Stevie was gone. I sat down where I was and stared at the trees. It didn't matter whether you said the word friend or not. If you felt friend, it was all the same. It hurt. Rooster came back. He told me he couldn't find Stevie. I didn't tell him what had happened. I didn't tell him Stevie was gone. I told him I didn't feel very well and didn't feel much like playing. He left to play with someone else. At lunch and dinner, I stared at Stevie's empty chair. I wondered where he was and if he was afraid. I would be afraid. Very afraid. I went right to bed after dinner. I took Doggy under the covers with me and hugged him. I didn't have to tell him Stevie was gone. He just sort of knew. I kissed him a few times and tucked him under my pillow. I fell asleep. I was awakened in the middle of the night by someone lifting my pillow and removing Doggy. I opened my eyes, but it was too dark to see anything. Suddenly, Doggy was placed into my arms, and the hair on my forehead was brushed back. Somebody kissed me. I blinked my eyes into focus as the dark figure walked down the row of beds. It was Sister Anne Catherine. In the days that followed, Rooster and I played together. But it wasn't the same. We both missed Stevie, but neither of us said anything. It was better that way. Sister Anne Catherine continued to give me Doggy in the middle of the night, and the kiss. One morning, Sister Barbara brought a new boy over to chair number 16 and slammed him into it. His eyes were red. The dried tears on his cheeks were smeared and streaky. I guess he'd tried wiping them away with his dirty hands, but couldn't. He sat perfectly still. He didn't move. I knew how he felt and wanted to say something to him, but I couldn't. Even if I could, what would I say? Everything's going to be all right? I didn't know if everything was going to be all right. I didn't know anything. Sister Barbara poured him hot cocoa. Before he realized it was in a metal cup, he lifted it to drink and burned his hand. He dropped the cup on the table, spilled the cocoa across the white tablecloth. I jumped to my feet.
Sister, I spilled my cocoa,
I yelled. I moved my cup in front of the new boy.
Sister Barbara came at me like a wild animal. She slapped me hard across the ear and knocked me into the table. She grabbed my hair and pulled me over the chair. I fell to the floor. She grabbed the back of my shirt collar and dragged me toward the front of the room. As she dragged me across the uneven wooden floor, great and small splinters began ripping into all parts of my body.
I screamed and cried, but the pain kept coming. She reached the front of the room and dropped me. She kicked me in the side, knocking my breath away. She opened a closet